geek. Talking baseball every week. Cause the D-Man and the Geek.
And welcome to Cleveland the Geek, home opener edition. I'm John Bonas, Twitch Daily with me here in Cleveland the Athletic.
That is me.
That is still you. New York Times of the Athletic?
Subsidiary of the New York Times.
Okay. Aaron Gleeman, subsidiary of the New York Times.
Yeah, that's right. You got it. I am myself a subsidiary of the New York Times. Not the greatest home opener. We were both there in our respective roles, which is me sitting on my butt in the press box and John drinking out in the concourses. In fact, as often happens, he ends up drinking, going out with my girlfriend, and then they both go, "You're welcome to come, but we know you won't. So have a good evening.
Have a good time."
I'm like, okay, So
it's not that you're not invited.
She literally said that. She was like, "Hey, we're at wherever Glicks or wherever you guys were at the time," and she's like, "Can you tell Phil Miller, because I was still in the press box? Can you tell Phil Miller that everyone really wants him to come hang out? Ramball Stu's here, and Bonas is here, and I'd like to talk to him, and so and so's here." And I said, "Yeah, I'll pass along the message to Phil." So I said, "Hey, Phil, you know, whatever." About 3 minutes later, I get a text from Becky, my lovely girlfriend of 10 years, by the way, who says, "Oh, by the way, you know, everybody would like to hang out with you too, but they know it's probably not going to happen." So, and I was like, "Yeah, good save. Good save."
Nice.
I know I'm no worse than like fourth or fifth on the list of people in the press box they would like to come over there. Can't be, because they only know a few people. So they don't really know Bobby yet. If they got to know Bobby Nightingale, they would surely prefer to hang out with him than me, but they just don't know him yet. And Betsy doesn't drink, so I can't be that low on the list. So anyway, 3-3 start for the Minnesota Twins.
Right.
We'll break some of that down, but the tricky part about early season in baseball, and I find this writing about the team, you know, the first couple of weeks of each season, or even it's hard to kind of get a meaty topic that's based specifically on performance.
Sure.
Because you know deep down, or at least I know deep down, that it's very fluid at this point. Like, there isn't that much to you can't now. Look, you can write an article and say, "Hey, they got to start hitting,"
right?
Or you can write an article and say the bullpen's been really good,
right?
But in terms of trying to say, well, what does this mean, or what is the next steps, or how will this affect them? It's pretty tricky. Right. I mean, and I was thinking about like, well, what.
We literally had a Patreon episode earlier this week called "Let's Overreact,"
yes.
where we're taking the first three games and trying to.
But even when you're willing to overreact, it's hard. Right. At least with our mentality towards things, where we try to kind of keep an even keel and not do as many hot takes. But I mean, 3-3, you'd obviously like to be 4-2 or 5-1 or whatever. Sure. It's not the prettiest start to the season, but you know, if the season is like a like a cross country flight. 3-3 just means you've taken off. That's it.
Right.
Nothing has happened. Right. You've the plane did not explode upon takeoff.
Right.
They haven't even started to bring the drink carts out yet.
Right.
You haven't even chosen the TV show or movie you're going to watch. Like, it's literally just started. That's it. You're going. You've successfully started.
Right. You avoided going 0-6.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Like, and having it be a real problem.
Nothing has happened yet. You've just sort of started your journey successfully. And that is, you know, that's better, like you said, than going 0-6.
Right.
But no one goes, well, maybe people who are very scared of flying go, "Yes, we took off and it didn't implode," or whatever. But, you know, you got a long way to go. And you haven't even reached like cruising altitude yet, you know, to continue this horrible analogy. And so, it's tricky. If someone said to you 90 seconds into the flight, "How's the flight going?"
Yeah.
You'd go, "Well, I don't know yet. We got to let me find out." And so that's kind of how I feel like we're at with the Twins.
I mean, that kind of rules out the big picture stuff.
Right.
But that leaves plenty of baseball to talk
for
about.
For sure.
Lots of minutiae. Right.
So 3-3 start. They go 3-2 on the road, and then they drop the home opener. We're recording this Friday morning. Today's an off day.
Right.
Then they play they finish the Cleveland series Saturday and Sunday. With Joe Ryan and Bailey Ober on the mound, we're going to talk a lot probably about Ober here in a minute. But so that'll, you know, you'll start to fill in some of the blanks at least a little bit. But, you know, they've been very, very low scoring games, which you often see in April across baseball.
Yeah.
Particularly teams that are playing outdoors. Now the Twins played the two in Milwaukee that were indoors, obviously. But they've scored 20 runs in six games, so that's 3.3 and a third runs per game, 3.33 runs per game.
Right.
you know, you want to be around 4.5, 5, even early in the season. But they've only allowed 23 runs, which is 3.8 per game.
Okay.
And that includes one game where they lost 11-0.
Right.
You take out that one start. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's a smart analysis to remove 1/6 of your sample size.
Sure.
But you get what I'm saying. You take out even really just the Bailey Ober performance in that game, because the bullpen only allowed 3 runs in 6 innings or whatever that game.
Right.
You take that out, and the team's got a sub-3 ERA, the rest of the team. And that it's not like they're starting pitching has been dominant. They've gotten a few 4-inning starts from Paddock and Varland. Pablo Lopez obviously has been their best starter, but he wasn't great yesterday. Just Cleveland kind of dinked and dunked them like they tend to do in the fourth inning.
I mean, oh, that fourth inning was – it was one of those the differences between these two teams' offensive philosophies was on full display yesterday, where the Twins are going to be swinging away at stuff. And that whole rally was opposite field looper, opposite field looper, opposite field. This one's actually driven in, now opposite field, now opposite field.
And when that's clicking, like it was 2 years ago for Cleveland,
right,
or like it was in that fourth inning yesterday,
right,
you go, man, this is the best type of baseball for a team to play offensively.
Yeah, right.
It's just constant pressure. Guys on the bases, as Carlos Correa said afterward, God, they just go first to third, first to third, first to third.
Right.
They just always got ducks on the pond. There's always pressure. You always got to make a big pitch.
And you can go first to third when you've got a pitch with no velocity going into the outfield, you know, or hit with no velocity going into the outfield.
Served into the outfield.
With the left fielder charging in every time.
On the other hand, the Twins have scored more runs than the Guardians the past 2 or 3 years.
Right.
And last year we saw the bad version of that, or the Guardians fans saw the bad version of that, which is nothing really stylistically or even underlying metrics-wise changed for them. They didn't strike out much last year. They put the ball in play. They just didn't get quite as fortunate on the balls in play.
Yeah.
And you're relying on good fortune, which means you can sort of some games that's going to look brilliant because they're going to be clumped together, all those hits.
Sure.
And you're going to score 3 or 4 runs off Pablo Lopez in one shot. And then some games or some months, it's not. And that's what we saw last year for the Guardians, and the Twins benefited from it. And like you said, the Twins' approach is largely the opposite of that. I mean, they're swinging for damage.
Right.
And that leads to more
walks. And they don't apologize for it.
Right. That leads to more walks. That leads to more strikeouts, obviously. Right. Although I will say, the first 5 games of the season, they had a below average strikeout rate, the Twins lineup. I know everyone perceives that whenever they're not scoring runs, it's because of strikeouts. We've sort of talked ourselves into that being the case. But they had
my guess is they fixed that yesterday.
Right. 15 strikeouts and 1 walk yesterday is very ugly.
Yeah.
Now, Cleveland has good pitching, but whatever. That's very, very ugly.
Those sliders are.
Yeah. I did see a stat. I think Parker Hageman, our friend, tweeted out a stat that the Twins have seen the most sliders in baseball this year as a hitting group, which is clearly a weakness. I mean, that's been a weakness for a while. They're kind of built to attack fastballs.
Right.
And by the way, that's not a bad thing. Right. I mean, if you can't really be built to attack sliders, you're not going to be a successful lineup because people can just pound you with fastballs. But the Twins, you know, they're trying to swing hard so that when they connect, the ball goes a long way. They're trying to pull the ball in the air because those are the most valuable balls that you can hit. But there's always been a discourse, and I know 2 years ago this was an issue with the Twins early in the season. Last year it wasn't really a talking point early in the season, but for the first half they didn't really hit well.
Right.
The idea that when the weather's bad and the pitchers are at an advantage, which is always the case early in the season.
Especially in Minnesota.
Although they've only played one game. Although it was cold in Kansas City too, but not like crazy cold, but balls pulled into the air have less value than they do in July and August and September. There's also maybe some thought that pitchers are just ahead of hitters coming out of spring training most of the time. Because pitchers are not reacting. Pitchers are the ones who are forcing the issue, and hitters are reacting to them. That's always been the premise.
We also don't know right now how the ball is playing in 2024.
Well,
really,
that's true, too. Yeah.
Like, that could be
Month to month, we don't even know during the season.
I mean, one of the keys in 2019, one of the things that we discovered was, turns out the Twins' offensive philosophy matches up so well with a juiced baseball, right? Whereas, you know, it might not work. I mean, the Cleveland philosophy might work a little bit better than unjuiced baseball.
Yeah.
Or a dead baseball.
Although last year in the second half, the Twins' philosophy worked beautifully.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of it's just about talent playing well and being healthy. But you look at the kind of game by game breakdown, the lineup, the Twins lineup, here's their game by game runs scored. 4-5-0-2-7-2. Well, you're not going to win a lot when that's the case. Oh. On the other hand, I mean, realistically, you're looking at two or three wins from that, and they've got three. Pitching-wise, one run allowed, 11, right. 3-3-4. Yeah. Now, I would look at those numbers and say they've pitched better than they've hit. And if anything, I'd kind of make the argument that they've pitched pretty decently.
I agree.
They got a sub-4 ERA, even though one game they gave up 11 runs. Now, I don't think they've been clicking on all cylinders by any means, but the bullpen's been really good. The rotation hasn't been great, but I think it's been okay in fewer innings than they would like to get. And the lineup just hasn't been good other than, you know, late in one of those Milwaukee games, late in one of those Kansas City games. Overall, they've just... They went 0 for 12 with runners in scoring position. I looked it up for the season. They're at 147 batting average with runners in scoring position.
Right.
So
that's the thing that's been standing out to people, right?
Yes.
The clutch hitting, whatever that's worth, has not been there. And, in fact, even sometimes the clutch put the damn ball in play hasn't been there, right? And that's one of the frustrating aspects of watching a we're going to hit the snot out of the ball team, right, is that you're going to have stretches where it's like, guys, you've got to adjust – your hitting philosophy, and you know it might take a little while for them to kind of find that.
Yeah, I mean, last year, Baldelli initially was like him joking, but then he just sort of started saying it, which was there's a lot of situations where we just have to put the ball forward, as an offense, you know, especially in the first half when they were getting guys on base. They weren't like amazing at getting guys on base, but there were plenty of opportunities, and they would just two strikeouts and a pop up, or three strikeouts or a double play or whatever. And it's just like there's so many situations where you literally just put the ball in play, and that's Cleveland's specialty. He sort of got back into that post game yesterday, which I thought was interesting. So early in the season, I mean, he's not going to call guys out, but when you go 0 for 12 with runners in scoring position and you strike out 15 times. After having a decent number of guys on base, his point was, you know, we have to be cognizant of the idea of April baseball or cold weather baseball, or at least not even cold, non-summer baseball. Let's put it that way. It's different. And he said it's different because the ball doesn't play as the same. It's different because the pitchers are ahead of the hitters. It's different just because you're not in a groove. You haven't played 100 games. Right. You're not on a roll yet. Yeah. You're not, you know, you're not sort of in your zone yet. Yeah. And he said we have to be cognizant.
It's harder to recognize that slider.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of factors. And this is not unique to the Twins, which is why I don't think it's really an excuse for them. They're playing teams that are in the same environment.
Yes. Right.
So believe me, I'm not making excuses. But I think he came as close as I would ever expect him to early in a season, especially, of saying, you know, our normal approach might not work here for a month. And we have to be quicker than we were the past couple seasons.
Or at least at moments in the game, there are times where we've got to adjust the approach. We talked to him about – this was a topic in October.
No, I mean, it's been a topic for three years, honestly. Right. Like,
but we had – in October, we had a sit-down with them at the end of the year.
Yes.
And the question sort of came up, you know, are you worried about all the strikeouts, blah, blah, blah? And the answer was, no, we are not worried about the strikeouts. We're going to lean into the effing strikeouts because it means we can hit the ball hard. It's a natural result of us hitting the ball hard. That said
– And by the way, they led the league in homers last year.
As an FYI. Now, they also said, that said you can have that philosophy. We're going to hit homers. We're going to hit the ball hard. We're going to accept the strikeouts that come as a natural result of that. And still, when you come up with a runner on third base and one out, adjust your approach that time.
Yeah.
You can still have that philosophy going forward. But this time, you just need to maybe shorten your swing. You know, you have to do something to put the ball in
play. It's interesting because, you know, study after study after study have shown, and we've talked endlessly about this, so we don't get that deep into it, that a strikeout in and of itself is not any different than just an out. But then people always go, what about with, you know, one out and runner on third?
Right.
Well, yeah, there are situations where a strikeout is significantly worse.
Right.
But the flip side is also true. Runner on first base and no outs, a strikeout is much better than hitting a ground ball to the shortstop, as Carlos Correa learned last year. There were about 30 times last year when it would have been better if Carlos Correa struck out. So it cuts a little bit both ways. But and they know that. The hitters are aware of that. They're not – it's, you know, the idea when someone like me says a strikeout is just an out – I mean, that's a big picture concept. It breaks down the further you want to break it down.
Right.
But my question with that always is, how easy is it to say to yourself as a player, as a lineup, as a team, well, yeah, we usually want to pull fly balls. And if that means strikeouts, if that means getting deeper in counts, if that means, you know, not shortening up your swing, all that stuff, well, okay, but twice a game,
right?
At most, maybe, probably on average, there's a situation that arises,
right.
Comes up, yeah. Not Luis arises, although that would help too, where it's like, oh, specifically in this spot, putting the ball in play has value. And I just wonder how effectively you can just sort of flip the switch and go to that mode,
right.
When A, you haven't really, I don't want to say practiced it, but you haven't really have as many reps or just game experience doing that approach because there's just right. A limited number of chances, especially early in the season. But then B, this lineup, well, this is less true than last year when they had Gallo and Michael A. Taylor, huge strikeout guys. It's not built to put the ball in play. And so right. It's one thing to say, you know, hey, runner on third or, you know, first and third, no outs. We don't need to be hitting a homer here. Just put something in play hard.
Right.
You know, hit a ball into the gap somewhere. Hit a ball up the middle somewhere, whatever. Right. It's easy to say that, but if the majority of the players in the lineup are not that type of stylistic hitter,
yeah.
It would be the same as saying to the Guardians lineup, hey, in this spot, hit for power. Right, it's like, right. Well, yeah, we can. There are some approach changes we can do to hit for power, but you know, Stephen Kwan is not going to just hit for power.
Right,
that's
right.
Not the type of player he is, and that's not about coaching or adjustments. That's just about the pieces you've put in place to build this lineup. And you look up and down the lineup. I mean, it's just not a situation where you can say to Ed Julian or Byron Buxton or you know, fill in the blank, even someone like Ryan Jeffers or whatever. These are good hitters,
right?
But they're not guys whose specialty is going to be putting the ball in play. Their specialty is going to be hitting the ball hard. And so I wonder how much of that is saying you need to change it and maybe even working effectively to change it,
right.
But being sort of banging your head against the wall to some extent, or at least capped in terms of how the level to which you can change it. Because it's like, well, I mean, we saw it last year with like Joey Gallo. You can tell Joey Gallo, you can have a, yeah. A permanent – earpiece in his ear where even when he's sleeping, someone is just whispering, put the ball in play, put the ball in play, put the ball in play. And it's still not going to matter because that's not the type of player. So that's kind of, they're aware of it. Baldelli spoke on it yesterday and he said, we have to make better adjustments to this. And I think that's all true. I mean, he's only echoing what any fan group would be saying, but I think it's a lot.
And
it's
what the guys in the locker room are probably saying.
Like, I just think it's potentially trickier than just saying, oh, let's do this. It's
right, like, of course.
Okay. But they do need to do it.
And we'll be talking a little bit more about, you know, other things that can impact the offense, like losing your best player.
Yes, that also is a factor.
But before we do that, let's cover a couple of quick sponsors. RotoWire. Okay, draft season's over. Maybe your draft didn't go particularly well.
Yeah.
And now you need some help.
Or
right?
Even if it did. Right. There's a lot of moves to be made and a lot of injuries to keep tabs on right. And a lot of lineup and playing time situations to know about during the course of a fantasy season.
Right.
Nowhere can you get better information and more detailed information and also just the ability to look up a guy's whole career basically right. Worth of notes,
right.
Which I find invaluable even yes. As outside of fantasy on RotoWire.
Yeah.
It is.
Or maybe you're playing fantasy baseball or you know daily pick. Yeah, baseball, that sort of thing. They've got new features like a lineup optimizer and a new picks tool to help people who play fantasy pick'em game, like Prize Picks and Underdog and such like that. So,
and you can get a totally free trial as our listener by going to rotowire.com/Gleeman. And when I say totally free trial for 2 days, try it out for 48 hours, see how you like it.
Right.
They don't even ask for your credit card. So it's not one of those, after 2 days, we're going to start charging you $1 billion a month.
Right.
They're pretty that's confident. Right. They've been doing this a long time. Yeah. Guys like John and I have been using RotoWire for decades.
Literally decades. You're right. You're absolutely
not
right.
Hyperbole when I say that.
No, that's right.
They're pretty confident that if you look at the product for free for 48 hours, you're going to learn what we learned, which is it's a good product that's worth keeping.
And it's not just baseball. You know, football. Golf. I tell you, I use it a lot for the golf bets that I do with the power trip.
So. I'm in a what we refer to as a high stakes fantasy basketball league, and as I told Doogie Wolfson yesterday at Target Field, I was horrible at it this season. But I would have been even worse if I didn't have player news from RotoWire. Okay. That's mostly what we talked about at Target Field is our fantasy basketball league. So, yes, RotoWire.com/Gleeman. Get the two-day free trial.
And then also, let's talk quickly about Raycon earbuds. We've been hyping Raycon earbuds now for also like 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And it's because they're really good earbuds that are not really expensive. And that's – it's just nice to find something that works really well, is well-engineered. Earbuds got to be engineered correctly. Like, it's not – you're not plugging them in and just putting them in your ear.
I think Raycon – I actually used them briefly this morning to listen to something. They're really good in terms of battery life, which is huge.
Yep.
If you're on a whole bunch of Zoom calls during the day or whatever, you don't want it to just stop working in the middle of it. John, I know it's important because you use them when you and Chrissy go running.
That is correct.
And so the actual like physical fit in your ear, I think, is better than a lot of other brands. And for someone like me who's a doofus with computer stuff, super easy to pair to devices, super easy to connect to Bluetooth and all that, which is huge for me too.
Noise isolation, earbud tap stuff. Like you just very, it just works.
This is a good product at a lower price point than you will often find.
And it's even going to be a lower price point if you go to buyraycon.com/Gleeman. Today, you'll get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off of the already low price and also free shipping at buyraycon. That's B-U-Y, as in buy something. Raycon, RAYCON.com/Gleeman. buyraycon.com/Gleeman.
Okay, so as you mentioned, as we sit here and
another thing that hurts
talk
the
about
offense.
The lineup struggling, they're also, you know, without their best player. And so it's funny. Baseball is really the only sport, I would guess, that you can lose your best player and people like us, right. will go. Like, if the Wolves didn't have Anthony Edwards, we wouldn't do like 15 minutes about how the offense is struggling and then go, oh, by the way, Anthony Edwards hasn't been playing. And be like, well, yeah, that's – you wouldn't see like but the Chiefs are really struggling. And then 20 minutes later – by the way, Mahomes hasn't played in 5 weeks.
Right, yeah, okay.
Baseball's different though because it's – I think that's why baseball's awesome, which is every lineup spot basically counts the same. Gotcha. You can have guys at the top get a few more at-bats and all that. But they're without Royce Lewis for all but 3 innings so far.
Yeah.
Now, he made a pretty big impact in those 3 innings.
He did nice
he hit 33% of all their home runs on the season in the first inning played.
That's it.
They only have 2 homers now. Ed Julian's homer yesterday to the opposite field was only their 3rd homer of the whole season in 6 games. So that's part of the problem, obviously.
Right.
The news on Royce Lewis, we talked to him a little bit yesterday. The first thing I said to Royce Lewis yesterday... My first chat with him was, hey, I saw a picture of you sitting in the upper deck at the Wolves game 2 nights ago or last night. I saw it was getting passed around Wolves Twitter, of which I am a lurker. I'm afraid to jump in with 2 feet of Wolves Twitter, but for fear that it's anything like Twins Twitter.
Right.
I can't take 2 of those. But people were passing around. There was a photo of him, I think his fiance posted like on Instagram or something, a picture of him. They were clearly like in the 300 level or whatever at Target Center, which I'm familiar with. And he was eating nachos. And people just thought it was so funny that he had horrible seats and he was just sitting there eating nachos. So I walked in the clubhouse and I see Royce Lewis and everyone's like asking about his quadriceps and everything. Mm-hmm. And I say, man, you got to get either the Wolves or the Twins to hook you up with better tickets. And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, I saw a picture of you sitting in the nosebleeds. And he goes, yeah, those were great seats, though, because I could see the whole court. I could see that we had a great time. It was a great game. The Wolves are so fun. I said, yeah, that's all true, but it would be truer if you were on courtside.
Yeah, right.
And then I'm like, I'm going to let you in on a secret. Bally would like to show you on camera, and then Marnie would probably come over and interview you.
Right.
And he's like, oh. And then you know what he said to me? Yeah, you're probably right. Let me tell you something. Alex Kirilloff bought the tickets. Like I'm
just throws him under the bus
because I will say Royce has a reputation, which he will joke about, of being cheap. So that was his way of saying, yeah, I didn't mind sitting in the nosebleeds, but also blame Kirilloff. So I didn't get a chance to say to Kirilloff, what's the deal, man? They'll sit you courtside, man. Like, come on. Like Nick Gordon, who was a big basketball fan, who was on the Twins for 3 years or whatever, would often get hooked up with Wolves tickets.
Right.
That's part of the the benefit of being a Major League Baseball player, sure, right? You see Vikings go there all the time. So anyway, that was my initial conversation with Royce Lewis.
All right, good.
Then after we got that important matter discussed.
How did you find time to talk to him with Seth hogging him the whole time?
Yeah, Seth stole us from Twins Daily was there. And I always forget, with the guys who come up through the farm system, Seth's been talking to these guys and like their whole family right, since they were like 14. A lot of these guys. Seth's like an uncle to a lot of these guys. He's talking to Cody Funderburk for 20 minutes. I'm like, boy, he really. But after we'd settled that whole Wolves situation, which I felt was key to talk to Royce Lewis, I need him to realize he's Royce Lewis. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
Everyone was like, oh, by the way, how's your severely strained right quadriceps? And, He's about a week into a month long shutdown, so he's not doing much.
Right.
He's not like going through any real baseball activities or workouts or anything. He's basically just shut down. He said he got a PRP, platelet rich plasma injection, which is meant to sort of stimulate the initial healing process and all that. But you know, he's usually with almost any injury, and unfortunately, we've seen him react to a lot of injuries so far. He's always one of these guys who's like, oh, they told me it's going to be a month. I want to be back in 3 weeks. That's his – that's fine. He didn't really take that approach, and it's very early in a process. And maybe the idea of announcing he's going to be shut down for a month was almost for him, his benefit.
It could be.
To be like, buddy, you're going to be shut down for a month. Do not attempt to be – we don't want to see you out there trying to run in the outfield or anything like that. But the general idea – is he'll be shut down completely for a month, so that's about 3 more weeks, let's say, at which point there's no chance of him returning at that point. That's only the point at which they'll basically reassess how are you physically. Are you able to then kind of start rehabbing or start the true process? Because the problem with a leg injury is there's just not that much you can do either when it's feeling that poor or that doesn't risk making it worse.
Right.
And so the month game plan, I think, is – let this thing heal up a little bit and calm down enough that we can then figure out, okay, is it going to be another 6 weeks? Is it going to be another 2 months? Is it going to be – their expectation seems to be – this is not from Royce. This is from the Twins. A two-month total goal of – you know, not that he's going to be back in the lineup exactly 2 months from the injury or anything, but their hope is – or a positive outcome, I think, would be at the two-month point, which would be late May – I guess.
Right.
He's perhaps on a rehab assignment or close to the point that they maybe can say he's 10 days away or something like that.
Right.
Now, a lot can go on, good or bad, before that that timeline. But that's, I think, what happens. And so, yeah, being without Royce Lewis, I mean, he's their number three hitter. He's their, you know, I would have probably picked him. I think I did pick him when we did our MVP picks.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose that bet.
Yeah.
For preseason, I picked him for team MVP. I just think he's, you know, the injuries are obviously a massive factor. They're a bigger factor today than they were a month ago, and they were a huge factor a month ago. But the talent and the production and the – even yesterday, Baldelli pregame, somebody asked him, you know, how many guys in the, on this team in your head are, like, capable of being, like, a number three or a number four hitter?
Okay.
Now, it's an interesting question because I don't think Baldelli views those as the two most important spots in the lineup.
Okay.
I think most teams now at this point, including the Twins, view the two spot as more important. Okay. But the concept of an RBI spot and all that.
Right.
It was an older school person who asked the question.
Sure.
It was one of the 17 Strib people who were at the game.
opening day, man.
Yeah. It's amazing. But Baldelli kind of – he thought about it and he was like, well, Royce – it was the first name,
right?
Which is interesting because he's injured and he's only played 70 games in the majors. But I don't disagree with him.
No, I don't either.
And you know, Correa and Buxton, and there's some other guys in that mix too who have done it and could do it. But when the guy that immediately comes to everyone's mind as the bat around whom the lineup can revolve is out, that definitely has an impact. We talked on the Patreon the day after the injury,
right?
About the different ways in which they could literally replace him on the roster, which ended up being Austin Martin.
Right.
It might have been Brooks Lee, except Brooks Lee is out for 3 to 4 weeks
with the back spasms
that he had at the end of spring training. And then from there, we were like, well, how are they actually going to fill third base? And it could also affect second base because you might want to take Farmer out of the platoon with Julian at second base to either use him at third base or platoon use him at third base. we haven't really gotten a good sense of that just because they don't face that many lefties.
Right.
What we've seen so far post-Lewis is against righties, it looks like it's going to be primarily Willy Castro at third base, right. Which makes sense because he's a switch hitter, so he offers you the left-handed platoon side, basically. Right. My question, though, is if you do face a couple of lefties, is it going to be Martin in there and Farmer in there,
right.
Which would probably be Martin at second, Farmer at third?
Right.
Or are they going to more keep Farmer attached to Julian at second base as a platoon
right.
And just make Willy Castro the primary nearly every day?
We haven't seen Martin play second base yet.
We haven't seen Martin do much other than pinch run
right. Yeah.
And play a little outfield. It's possible they view Martin as more of a placeholder, as more of a, you know, let's let him fill in the blanks, let's let him run a little bit, let's let him play defense, as opposed to we're going to slot him into even like a platoon,
right.
More of a cemented role. I think that would kind of be a mistake because I think he's capable of doing that role. On the other hand, Willy Castro's a switch hitter.
Right.
So he doesn't necessarily need to be platooned. So yeah, I'm curious to see. We might not find this out ever. Like, they might not face that many lefties to really get a firm grasp of right. what their plan is against lefties, right. Which that's fine because I actually think they're probably better off
and the plan,
facing righties and
the
at this
plan
point.
Right now might not be the plan 2 or 3 weeks from now. Like you said, right. for starters, Brooks Lee could be get healthy. Yes,
who's also a switch hitter.
Who's a switch hitter and had a nice spring and, you know, I'm sure they'd like to have him some more time, get him some more time at AAA. We just saw Jose Miranda. Play third base for the first time.
Yeah, for 8 innings.
Yeah.
It was his first time at third base. He was at AAA 2 games right. ago.
Yeah.
Last night he was at DH again. So.
Oh, is he?
Right. That didn't get people all worked up as much as him playing third base. We had that morning on the Patreon, we did a mailbag and somebody asked about whether the Twins still view him as a third baseman. And I was like, not really. And then was in the lineup at third base. I will stand by what I said, by the way. I think if you track the AAA lineups right. just in general, you will see guys play positions.
Sure.
Like, nobody knows who this is, but Alex Isola,
yeah.
Who's a catcher / first baseman, has played a couple games yep. in left field for the Saints. Right. I don't think that's because the Twins think he's a viable left fielder. I think it's just they got a bunch of guys they want to play in St. Paul, and, right. you know, why not play everybody everywhere? But, yeah, I mean, if his shoulder is fine now,
right.
which that was a huge issue last year, he ended up having surgery on it. Right. Well, that was part of why he was kind of ruled out as a third baseman is that, you know, he was never going to be a great third baseman. But if he's not able to throw or throw well or throw without pain, well, he has no shot of playing third base right. in the majors. But if he's back to throwing okay, and I saw a couple clips from him at St. Paul in the game he played at third base, he made a couple of decent plays. Then, yeah, I mean, he certainly offers a different dimension offensively than someone like Austin Martin.
Right.
And even than someone like Brooks Lee in that he's just a right-handed bat, theoretically, with power.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you could platoon him with Castro at third, and you could platoon Farmer with Julian at second, and you kind of have two idealish lefty-righty platoons that obviously would push out Austin Martin. I'm of the belief with a guy like Austin Martin, and just any kind of decent prospect in general, that unless it's truly like a two-day call-up, or it's something like a playoff roster addition where the guy understands, like, I'm just here to be icing on the cake.
Right.
I want to play a guy.
I agree.
Like, and
I'm surprised they haven't.
Yeah.
They
haven't faced that many lefties, and that was where he would primarily play. But, yeah, I agree.
But we basically – what we thought would happen was that he would become Margot, and Margot would be in the role that we're seeing Martin. You know what I mean? That we thought Margot would be relegated to much more sort of spot stuff, and Martin would end up getting a lot of
right.
a lot of the, you know, starts or so on that you would normally
but put. But, yes, there was literally a situation on the road trip where Martin came in to run –
right.
Played, I think, an inning defensively in the outfield. Yes. And then when that spot in the lineup came up again,
they pinch hit Margot.
Margot pinch hit for him. And my thing was like, first of all, I'm not sure Margot is a better hitter than Austin Martin. Right. I get that right. there's no right. less track right. record. Yeah, so, but if you did view Margot as that significantly better an option to hit in that spot, why not just pinch run Margot right. and let. Now, he's slightly slower than Austin Martin, but right. he's still fast. So, right. yeah, I'm curious to see their usage. My thought on Austin Martin, and again, I'm probably a little higher than most on Austin Martin still. I just believe he does. I'm not saying he's going to be a star or anything, and I'm not even certain he's going to be a quality regular. I think he might end up being more of a super utility type. But the things he does well, which is control the strike zone, put the ball in play, slash the ball around, run well, right, and play some up the middle positions. That's stuff that should transfer to the majors, right, but you need an opportunity.
And it's stuff that this team could use.
Well, that
I mean, we just spent the first 20 minutes talking about exactly needing that, yes, that kind of skill set on this team.
So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't have a huge problem playing Willie Castro for a while and seeing if last year's production's for real.
I'm with you.
He's fine defensively. Yeah. You know, that leaves Farmer mostly at second base. I have no problem with any of that. But, yeah, Miranda could re-enter the mix. I mean, honestly, Miranda could – If it's a week and a half from now and Austin Martin has six total at-bats, they may just decide we might have more use for Miranda, not necessarily at third base, but first base DH against lefties. Yeah. But again, if they're not facing that many lefties, right, it changes what your needs are. There's the theoretical, oh, it'd be nice to have this guy, but then if you call him up and you face one lefty in 10 games, it's like, well, yeah, we didn't really get that much value out of him. But yeah, in the meantime, they certainly miss Royce Lewis. They're going to need Willie Castro to step up, which would be a good thing just on all fronts. But, you know, we talked during the spring how last year, 3 days before camp broke, Willie Castro wasn't even going to be on the opening day roster.
Right.
And he ended up fourth on the team. And
Juan Miranda was going to be, or Jose Miranda was going to be one of the middle or the order presences.
Who's Juan Miranda?
I don't know. No, I keep saying it all the time.
But usually with you, look, we both screw up names.
Was there not a Juan Miranda someplace?
I don't know. There's
a pitcher?
Oh, there's a – well, Manuel Miranda, that's his cousin. But yeah, I don't – well, whatever. At least you're not you said Margot, not Gobert.
I did.
That's become a running joke.
Juan Miranda, 2008 to 2011, first baseman and pinch hitter.
For the Twins?
No, Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I'm sure you were big on the Diamond.
The Yankees and Diamondbacks.
You watch a lot of Diamondbacks games during that time, John?
I must have been playing fantasy baseball at that point. He must have
He was a huge factor on fantasy baseball. Yeah. I bet he does have a RotoWire page probably.
Oh, for sure he does.
That's about it.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So they're going to have to get by without Royce Lewis. Look, Royce Lewis is great, but as I said earlier, the beauty of baseball is no matter the Jenga piece you remove from the stack in baseball, it should not cause the entire thing to crumble down. You know what I mean? Like, okay.
You remove enough of them.
You remove, but who's removed?
Right. No, yeah, him? No, right.
Royce Lewis is a huge Jenga piece to remove. Agreed. Is Jenga even still a thing? Would anybody under 40 know what I'm even talking about? Okay.
They play it at bars now.
Well, yeah, there's a life-size one at Uptown that I've played before, drunkenly, which is really the only way to play life-size Jenga. I don't want to play that sober, but so, yeah, they're going to need Castro to step up. If that doesn't happen, they're going to need to deploy Martin at second and Farmer at third a little bit more. And if those things also don't click or aren't a fit for them, Miranda could re-enter the picture. Jose Miranda, not Juan Miranda. Although I don't know what he's doing. Maybe he's still in good shape.
Maybe.
Call his ass up.
That's right.
I'm willing to try anything. So that's where the offense is. And then in the meantime, Royce told me, he's hoping to go to some playoff games at Target Center.
Okay.
But he also said,
get better tickets.
I got that's what I said. I said, if you are sitting in the nosebleeds for a playoff game at Target Center, I might be mad. But also he said, well, I got to figure out when they play versus our schedule. And I thought in the back of my head, do you? Because you're on the IL. But I don't think he wants to be seen at a playoff game while the Twins are playing or whatever. He's very very team first. But
so that's Juan Miranda, left-handed hitter. He's not going to be able to help this team right now.
I like you now know more about this
40-year-old Juan Miranda.
He's 40 years old, yeah. Listen, he's right in our prime. I'm 41. I'm ready to go here. I could barely get over here because my hip. So I'm ready at 41. Okay, so that's the Royce Lewis and the infield situation.
Well, the other person that has somewhat replaced Royce Lewis, I think, is Kirilloff at the top of the order. Now.
Sure.
I mean, it was, you know, originally we saw Kirilloff batting number two, and we're like, well, A, they need to bat somebody up there now, right? Because Lewis is out. You need to add some bats up there. And second of all, well, Kepler's out.
He missed the first couple games
in there. And they need to have some left-handed presence up there.
But now Kepler's back.
Now Kepler's back batting fourth. And Kirilloff is still sitting there at the number two. And
he's looked
kicking
amazing.
Ass.
Yeah. He's looked great.
Right.
I mean, he's hitting, I don't know, 440 with power.
I think in the same podcast where we talked about how Jose Miranda was probably never going to play third base again, and then he ended up did. I think we also talked about how Kirilloff looks like he's kind of hitting the ball a little bit. Yeah. And he went out and went four for four.
We're always so cautious with Kirilloff because we've seen this before. I mean, one thing you can say about Kirilov is if he can get any sort of health,
right?
There's very rarely, even not sustained, even when he's healthy for 2 weeks,
right?
He hits,
yeah.
And that's the what's so frustrating about his injury issues is that there's no question the talent,
right?
And there's no question the upside and the ability to hit. I mean, you look at his overall numbers. This is his fourth season, but obviously he's been hurt for a lot of it. But he's played, I don't know, 200 games in the majors. He's got like a 110 OPS plus. Right. And that's with either wrist or shoulder problems that required surgery. I would say probably 75% of those at-bats.
Right.
He's been at less than 100%. And probably a third of those at-bats have been him playing through an injury that had surgery a month later. And so right. The fact that he's been an above-average hitter throughout that is amazing, given the context of it. Right. And then within that, whenever he's been healthy, and even there's been stints at AAA, he won International League Player of the Year, I remember, a year ago, when he was healthy. And he just destroyed AAA pitching. And it's such a good swing, and he has such an ability to wait back on pitches and drive them to the opposite field, left and left center, which we've seen. And even some of the outs he's made – on the road trip were well struck fly balls that were, you know, they weren't like amazing catches, but they were into the gaps and near the walls to where you say, this is what a healthy
if the ball was flying just a little bit further in the summer.
That's a good point.
Might be a different story.
And the giveaway with him always is when that changes to ground balls to second base usually or to first base, that's often when you can say, uh-oh, something might be wrong with him physically. So it's going to be one of those situations where, I mean, he could play 15 years of a Hall of Fame career, and in the 14th year of that, we'll still be sitting here going, well, hopefully he stays healthy.
Right.
I mean, that's just how it is. It's the same with Buxton. Unfortunately, it's probably going to be the same with Royce Lewis. But right now, this is why you're seeing the version of Alex Kirilov right now. That is why people like us and the Twins and Prospect Hounds and all that have continued to sort of ride that bandwagon despite a ridiculous number of injuries, because the talent is always there from the eye test or the numbers, and these little glimpses, and hopefully this will be a long glimpse right now, but these little glimpses where you go, man, this guy just takes great at-bats. He can rip the ball down the right field line. He can spray the ball in the air to left and left center. I mean, it's just quality. And so it doesn't, in that sense, it doesn't surprise me that without Royce Lewis, and especially Kepler's looked terrible, that Baldelli is just like, who are my best at bats here? Yeah. Like the quality of the at bats. And Julian hasn't looked great, but certainly big picture, he's going to give you a good at bat at the top. And, you know, maybe I would put Correa second or something. He's mostly been batting fifth, which is a little weird. He's also, we should say, been great offensively.
Yes.
He's hitting 400. He's drawn a bunch of walks.
Yep.
He looks much faster. He made a uncharacteristic error yesterday, which he was very upset about.
Which cost the team a run.
Yes.
But also they got the out.
he made a bad uncharacteristic error and then made a high IQ play to throw behind the runner get the out. But he's been great offensively too, so you could certainly move him up a little bit. Buxton went 0-for-4 yesterday, but prior to that had looked good offensively. This, by the way, this guy's looked good until yesterday. These are why it's tough to make these big analysis of six games, because it's like, well, if you take out this and only focus on that.
I will say this about Kirilov. He's been playing every day.
Yes.
I mean, they've juggled around the lineup a few times, essentially mostly to give Buxton time at DH, so he's not playing center field every day, right? He's playing second. By the way, we should probably just call that out. Like, he's playing center field, what, 4 out of the 6 games now?
And he's played every day. He's been in the lineup every day, too.
He's
Correa.
That's right. But when they put him at DH and Kirilov can't be there, Kirilov's been in left field.
Yeah.
Waldner's been the guy,
odd
man out. Sometimes it's been because Kepler was hurt, you know, so Waldner just moved or slid over to right field. That's one of the reasons we've seen Kirilov in left, I think, three times.
For sure.
So far. Two of those was probably because Kepler was hurt.
But Kirilov has yet to play an inning at first base.
Yeah.
Which is where he played primarily last year.
That's all Santana at this point.
You're, yes. Yeah.
Another guy who's been in the lineup all 6 days.
Correct.
Yeah.
He made a good play defensively yesterday. Get a runner. They threw out three runners at home yesterday and still lost, which is strange. And then I would say another guy who you know, if we're trying to find bright spots, especially in the lineup, there aren't. It's kind of few and far between. But certainly Kirilloff and Correa have been really good.
Right.
Buxton has shown the flashes of a healthy Buxton, which is always great to see. Right. Other than that, it's been kind of hard to find production. And even this guy I'm about to say, you look at his numbers, I think he's only hitting like 200. But I thought the quality of Christian Vasquez's at-bats have been really good. He had a sac fly that scored a run on the road trip that could have easily been a shot into the gap. He had one yesterday that was really hard hit, but right at an outfielder. And, you know, these are small things. These are really small silver linings. But when you have the type of season that he had last year, well, he just didn't hit the ball hard last year ever. And so when there's two or three balls that he hits hard in the air that get caught, you can at least take away from that, all right, well, the quality of contact here is better than it was last year. So much of the time last year, he seemed to be, it was almost like the end of Mike Redmond's career where like the goal was just to flip a single over first base.
Right.
And it's like, that's no way to make a living. And I'll also give Vasquez credit. He's done a great job throwing from behind the plate.
Right. Yeah.
Nailed a couple of runners, including Bobby Witt at one point in a big spot. So Vasquez has been playing better, and based on what we kind of thought the catching situation, they've basically just alternated.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Which Jeffers has struggled, except for the three-run homer he hit, which won them the game, essentially, in Milwaukee. So that was good to see. I guess we can talk a little bit about pitching. But before that, let's read our last couple of sponsors here.
Game time.
Yes, you will be going to Target Field, it turns out.
Tomorrow, I am going with I've got two tickets for every game because I got the Twins pass, one for me and one for Chrissy. But tomorrow I'm going with two friends. I only have two tickets. I've
good
got three
friend
people.
Brag, John. Jeez. Some of us don't have
two old friends. Hopefully it's not going to be raining. And I will tell you, we've got two tickets. We're going to need a third at the bar before the game. We're just going to go out to Game Time and grab ourselves a ticket.
Yes, the Game Time app, they specialize not only in sporting events, but you know, comedy shows, plays, concerts, that sort of thing. They're two specialties.
Right.
Are hard to find tickets.
Right.
And then also last minute tickets.
Yep.
And like you said, you can literally be walking to the ballpark.
Yes.
Open the Game Time app on your phone. And by the time you get to gate whatever, you can be ready to scan in and go. You can just walk seamlessly into the ballpark. John has done it many times. I've done it. I did it for a Wolves game, actually, last year, I remember. It was super easy to use. And if so
they've even got stuff like – they've got some special functionality built in, like zone deals. I don't know if you use this, but you basically say, I want this section. You choose the seat, Game Time.
That's the best value.
Right. Best value. You pick those out for me. So
take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. For a limited time, all users can get $20 off any MLB purchase of $150 or more in the Game Time app with the code FIRSTPITCH. So the code is FIRSTPITCH. Terms apply. That's code FIRSTPITCH, FIRSTPITCH, for $20 off through April 14th. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute ticket, lowest price guaranteed.
Yeah. Also, Harry's Razors. You know, I am going to Japan, and I am going to bring a couple of Harry's razors to shave while I am in Japan. It's one of those things where in the past, I might not have been as diligent about shaving as I have other times because razors would get old, right? But these are easy. They come in a package. They show up. They're half price, half the price of the usual razors, and it's going
to
be just
– Yeah. I always say you don't have to go to a store and try to talk some – person into angrily opening up a case for you because they're annoyed to be doing it.
I find myself shaving against the grain. I shave myself both with the grain and against the grain now because it gets me a closer shave, and I'm not afraid of the razor anymore because it's always sharp. Because when it's not sharp, I just throw it away and grab another one.
Yes, German engineered blades made in their factory, so they kind of cut out the middleman, delivered right to your door. They have a trial set.
Right.
That you get a 5-blade razor with a weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover. It's a $13 value. You get it for $3, and all you have to do is go to Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com/Gleeman. Get started with that $13 trial set for just $3. That's harrys.com/Gleeman. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry.
Yeah, give it a try, and if you like it, you can put it in your travel case.
I love when John does the little bows on the ads because it's like, It's always funny to me. So John's like for the advertising version of like, hey, get home safe. Like at a party when someone's like about to close their car door. You're like, hey, get
it. It's a long goodbye. Minnesota long goodbye. Yeah, yeah.
John's head, he's like, that'll help them get home. Like, then if they, right. I yeah. won't feel bad.
Otherwise, they won't feel too bad. Right. They won't be dangerous going home now. They'll be safe.
Hey, I'll see you next time. It's like, okay, buddy. I hope that wasn't super loud. And I tried to step back from the microphone, but I have a bad sense of
okay, I've got the headphones on. You're all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
John's ears are bleeding, but I don't, that might just be from something
else. That's just
you. Yeah. That's my overall effect. Right, yeah. Okay. So let's see. Is there anything else with the lineup? I mean, Buxton, but he's looked good playing every day. Baldelli said to us yesterday, there's no real kind of mapped out plan for how often he's going to play center versus DH.
Right.
I think it's like you said, it's been a 4-2 split.
4-2, I think.
They're mostly,
basically, one per series. He gets a.
Yeah.
Which, and they've had a lot of days off here, too,
right.
Which is part of the thing.
I would say, you know, two on, one off. Not off, but two right. on, one on DH makes sense. Yeah. And then you're going to have some off days mixed in there, too. Right. He just hasn't taken it yet. But Baldelli basically said it's going to be more reactive than proactive at this point, which means.
Wow.
Which is probably, I would say, good news, just generally.
Yeah.
They don't feel the need to right. sort of That's pre-manage crazy. It. Now, we'll see in a month if that's the case. But what he really meant was, you know, when you're playing center field, there are going to be days when he's got to lay out for two balls or even just sort
sure.
of sprint after a few balls. But there's also going to be days in center field where you don't have a single thing to do. You just go out and stand there.
That's true.
Well, on those days, he might be able to play center field more likely the next day. Yeah. The days when he's going all out for six different plays, maybe the next day's a DH day or a day off day right. or something like that. It all seems fairly reasonable to me, so we'll see on that. All right, let's talk a little bit about pitching. So we mentioned, I mean, the Twins have a better than average ERA overall.
Yep.
And that is with one horrendous game against the Royals.
Real stinker.
And their rotation has like a, you know, 3-something ERA even with that. Obviously, you start to remove Bailey Ober, I think, what he got, 1 2/3, and he allowed 8 earned runs or something like that.
Yeah.
Then the numbers look really good. I'm not going to push that narrative that much because it's so early. But Baldelli was asked yesterday about Bailey Ober. And because not only did the Royals knock him around, like genuinely knock him around, with, I think, 3 homers and some well-struck doubles and stuff like that. Even some of the outs were up against the wall. He's made, like, I don't know, 60 starts in the majors, something like that, career, right. 50 or 60 starts. And there's really only been, like, 3 or 4 that have been genuinely bad. Like, you know, he's had some where he goes 4 innings and he allows 3 runs or something like that where they're not great. But he's pretty rarely – I mean, one of the kind of positives to Bailey Ober versus, like, Joe Ryan – even if you think Joe Ryan has more upside and is just maybe a better pitcher, like for this season,
sure.
he's been more prone to blowups.
Sure.
Like where he just gives up 4 homers and Bailey Ober has avoided that for the most part better than almost any pitcher of his caliber, except the Royals got to him, obviously, in his first start of this year. And I think going back a couple years, they had back-to-back starts where they kind of knocked him around a little bit. And so Baldelli was asked yesterday, did the Royals have something on Bailey Ober? And he said, yeah, we think so, which is right. interesting. Yeah. And people always react to that, I think, more harshly than those within baseball would intend it.
Right.
Because it's really a spectrum. I mean, at the far end of the spectrum is what the Astros were doing, like literally not only stealing signs, but then communicating them electronically and all that. Yeah.
Had a system in place, electronics.
I think everyone can probably agree that that's out of line.
Right. Yeah.
But there's a lot between just going up there blind and swinging and that.
Right.
And there's a kind of a murky middle where we always
– his arm slot's a little different this one,
exactly.
So here comes the change.
Like if you notice, a lot of pitchers who throw a split-finger fastball will – every single pitch in their glove before the pitch, they will position their hand to throw a splitter.
Right.
And then as they're going through their motion to throw the pitch, if they're not going to throw the splitter, they just switch it to a regular grip. Because if you do the opposite, if you set up in a normal grip and then as you're going through and try to get into a splitter grip, it's noticeable.
Right.
And so people can figure out that you're throwing a splitter. Paul Molitor famously was – throughout his career as a player, as a coach, as a manager, right. people talked about him as a baseball savant, which he is, but they would always give him credit for he would just stand at the top of the dugout and he would just stare at the pitcher and he would stare at the third base coach giving signs and he would stare at the catcher. And by the fourth inning, he would say, okay, here's their steal sign. Here's right. their bunt sign. Right. I can tell this guy when he's throwing changeup because he's got a slightly lower arm slot. And people were like, well, this is amazing.
Right.
He helped countless teams win sure. countless games, right. including the Twins, because of that. But that's really just a version of what Baldelli is saying right. the Royals are doing.
Right.
There's no sort of villainous behavior here. It's just he pointed out yesterday, he being Baldelli, that all the damage was done on fastballs and changeups.
Yeah.
Not on the breaking balls.
The changeups in particular right. were
and so
hammered.
The idea there
as
can
if
be,
they knew a changeup was coming.
Correct. right. Or if you can just sort of A-B it.
Right.
Fastball or changeup,
right.
and you don't have to worry about sliders or you don't have to worry about whatever because you sort of X that out of the mm-hmm. equation because of some factor, then that can help you too. His point wasn't to say, you know, we're launching an investigation against the Royals.
Sure.
It was more like, good on them.
Right.
They seem to have something on Bailey going back years. We're spending this week trying to figure out from our point of view what that is.
Right.
And that's
right.
not just Bailey. It's they're basically sort of doing opposition research on themselves,
sure, right.
which is their all their analytics guys and all their scouting and video coordinator guys are really pounding the pavement, crunching the numbers on Bailey Ober to try to figure out, like, if we were the Royals,
right.
what are we noticing here right. that then he can correct? So he starts Sunday, not against the Royals.
right.
So I'll be very curious to see what his pitch mix is, if there's any sort of noticeable mechanical differences, and then just also the overall performance.
I'll also point out, you know, when he last year, when he wasn't with the Twins, his first two starts with the Saints were not very good.
Right.
Both of them, he went like three innings, and it was now, not partly them.
I would caution that there may have been mentally.
Well, no,
he was mad.
At that time, we talked about that, yeah. right? We said at the time, you know, he said all the right things. He was clearly
right.
motivated
he's not a
in spring training.
Like,
no,
he wasn't
no.
throwing a fit.
No.
But it's just, it's a hard thing to take just, that demotion.
Exactly, yes. Right. Yes. He's not that guy at all. But yeah, you can see where he would be. And we kind of, boy. I bet, you know, maybe he's feeling it a little more than right. he wishes he could
Denny
feel
was
it,
great for yeah. the next was, 3 months,
right,
basically.
Exactly right. So.
And he was pretty good in spring training. The other thing about getting knocked around by the Royals, which I don't think that's going to happen to a lot of pitchers this year. It didn't happen in the other two games against the Royals, certainly. But velocity-wise, he was actually up slightly over kind of the baseline what you would expect from Bailey Ober. And so that, you know, when you see a guy, there's been Joe Ryan starts, to use him as an example again, where you go, ooh, he's only throwing 91 today. Right. Well, then you're not shocked if he gets knocked around a little because the quality of the stuff that he's throwing at these guys is a little bit less than you would like to see. There are just some days when a guy's not feeling great or whatever, he's fatigued or just not off that day. But when you see a pitcher just get shelled and the stuff is there, the velocity is there, then, yeah, it's natural to be like, okay, well, what else is going on here? And right. he said he felt fine physically. He had a pretty good spring training. It's not like he struggled really in spring training. So I'll be very curious to see. I would say in general, with the starting pitchers, everyone's velocity is up, which you don't yeah. often or always see early in the season.
Right.
I mean, there have been times –
right.
You might see a pitcher throw 92, 93 and go, where's the 95, 96? It's been the opposite with right. the Twins. I mean, Pablo Lopez is pumping 96, 97 in both starts. Louis Varland, who wasn't great, but was throwing 96, 97, 98 as a starter in multiple innings. Chris Paddock was 95 yeah. coming off Tommy John.
Yep.
And then Joe Ryan was pumping 95, 96 instead of 92, 93. All these guys are throwing harder than you would expect, but I felt like the – I don't know, the command or the control, and Ober, same example. Like the command just wasn't there, and they just didn't. There were a lot of foul balls instead of swings and misses. They seemed to have trouble. Even yesterday, Lopez seemed to have a little bit of trouble. Now, partly it's because Cleveland's lineup is built to be pass.
Right.
But kind of finishing as many at-bats as you'd want with two strikes, that leads to balls being put in play instead of being strikeouts. It leads to some walks because you get deeper in counts. And so sure. I think that's – you look at some of the starts, and other than the one first Lopez start was really impressive on opening day yeah. in Kansas City, yeah. they've been a lot of just sort of battling through, getting through four, haven't looked that great, and haven't gotten shelled other than Ober, but not great. And I think a lot of that, it's not because the stuff isn't there. It seems to be more the feel hasn't quite been there. And that's not shocking, I guess, first time through the
– I think it's also worth calling out for those of you who haven't paid that much attention to this or in the past or you know just haven't noticed it. You know, first start for starting pitchers is often pretty short. You know, we're seeing a lot of four-inning starts. I don't think that is a precursor to – I hope it's not a precursor to, you know, having shorter starts this year than we would like to see. I think it's mostly about – no, they like to keep them in about the 80s on their first timer.
Nobody threw 100 pitches in spring training.
Right.
And so – but I would also say – I agree with that. The goal is 5 innings instead of, let's say, 6 innings, which it might be in a month.
Right.
But I don't – I can't really point to any – like the opening day when Valdez went out to talk to Lopez in the sixth, right? And Lopez talked himself into the game. Now, I would argue, based on Baldelli's comments, Baldelli wanted Lopez to talk himself into the game. That was the goal there.
Right.
But other than that, there hasn't really been the case that anybody's been removed from a start when things were clicking. Right. You know, with Varland, with Paddock, obviously Bailey Ober – arguably was left in too long. Now, it's weird to say that about a guy who recorded 5 outs. Right. But they tried to leave him, and they tried to get 3 or 4 innings from him, and it just didn't take. But with, you know, Joe Ryan, maybe you could have tried to get him through the 6th inning or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, he was getting up there in pitches, and he wasn't quite as sharp. With the Paddock and Varland starts, they were lucky to get 4 innings out of both of them.
That's right.
They had some rough patches there where they had some real long innings and battling.
Long innings, and they ended up, you know, reaching – 89 pitches or something in 4 innings. So,
so I don't think you can blame, a quick hook, for lack of a better term, on that so far. It's more performance-based. But, I would expect look around the league in general. There's only been, like, 3 starts of 7 innings so far across Major League Baseball. Right. And Lopez has one of them. Maybe there's a few more now the last couple of days. But, so, yeah, I think – I don't know. They need Bailey Ober to be good.
Right.
And so it's worrisome when a guy who doesn't get shelled ever gets shelled by a not very good lineup. But, you know, he's smart enough and they're smart enough if there is something going on to figure it out and make an adjustment from it. Let's see. A couple other pitching things. Anthony DeSclafani.
Yeah.
Done for the year. Probably done for his Twins career before it even started. He's had or will have. I don't know if he's had it yet. Flexor tendon surgery, which isn't Tommy John surgery, but might as well be for their purposes. He's done. We'll end up never throwing a pitch for the Twins. You know, we talked a lot on the Patreon. PATREON, patreon.com. We're doing 2 episodes a week on Patreon. So if you like this show, you should be listening to the Patreon.
Yes.
You know, that trade or him being in the Polanco trade – it wasn't about him, and if anything, he was either viewed as just a completely neutral value, like, do you want him for $4 million?
Right.
We'll eat $4 million. The Giants had already eaten $4 million, so only a third of his $12 million salary was the Twins' responsibility.
Right.
There's some thought from – I've tried to ask around on this – that the Mariners basically said –
you've got
to
take
him. You have to take him to get the other 3 players. We think it's a little lopsided, this trade, in your favor.
Well, or we just have a budget number we're trying to get underneath, and Polanco puts us over it. We need you to take back $4 million worth of salary for somebody.
Right. Now, that doesn't – all that can be true, as we often like to say in the show, multiple things can be true. That can be true, but it can also be true that they didn't bring in any other reinforcements.
Right.
And so they were counting on DeSclafani to be the 5th starter for a while because they wanted Varland to be waiting in the wings. They didn't want to dip into their minor league depth. Now, obviously, that's out the window. You take DeSclafani out of the picture immediately. Varland steps in. They now need him to step up. And then the question is going to be, how long can they go until they need a 6th starter?
Right.
And it's because that 6th starter is no longer Varland because he's the 5th starter. Now the 6th starter is Simeon Woods Richardson maybe or David Festa, some young guy who they were hoping not to need until June or July or August.
Right.
They're almost certainly at some point going to need him. So that's the big question. But yeah, DeSclafani, he's going to join the list of – I don't know. I was trying to remember who's the last guy – it would almost have to be a pitcher – that they acquired and then – never pitched for them. Oh. Like, they've acquired pitchers, clearly. This is a huge talking point, like Tyler Malley, right. Sam Dyson, etc. They've acquired guys who have very quickly gotten hurt.
Right.
But, I mean, Tyler Malley still made a dozen starts for them. Sam Dyson, unfortunately, made a dozen appearances for them. Yeah. And on and on. I can't remember a guy, and I'm sure people are screaming at their phones right now trying to tell us via ESP who they are. I'm sure there are examples. But to acquire a pitcher and have him get hurt before he even throws a pitch is tricky. It would have to be an off-season acquisition because any in-season acquisition is going to pitch within days. But, yeah, I can't think of that. It's unfortunate. It takes a chunk out of their depth. But, again, he was only being relied on as depth to make that Mariners deal work and because – ownership slash payroll.
Right.
If ownership doesn't slash payroll, you just go sign, I don't know, Seth Lugo, or you go trade for somebody who makes the full $12 million. Right. And that's not to say those guys can't get injured either, but, you know, it gives you more of a fighting chance than DeSclafani, it turned out. Also on the pitching front, sounds like Caleb Theobar is pretty close to going out on a rehab assignment. He's been out since early on in spring training with a hamstring strain. That would help.
See,
I mean, certainly
interesting to see what move that ends up leading to.
My assumption is it would be Funderburg. I don't think it's
that was the default assumption. Right. Like the I think Theobar's injury is why Funderburg is on the roster. Oh, 100%, right?
Yeah,
but I'm not sure that necessarily means he's going to be the one to go down either.
Well, yeah, nothing says Funderburg would not have made the opening day roster.
It might be Duarte
if Theobar were not injured. But that doesn't mean he's forever connected to Theobar.
Right, that's right.
You can disconnect yourself by pitching well.
That's right.
And, somebody else gets sent down. Although Duarte's look fine, too.
Yep.
By the way,
it looked real good.
When I said Theobar's close to going on a rehab, I think they're going to ask him to make – because essentially he's going to have a shortened version of spring training buildup because he never pitched in a game during spring training.
Right.
And he's a reliever, so it's not the same as a starting pitcher needs to get to 75, 80 pitches. But he's got to get to 20 pitches. He's got to pitch back-to-back games or two out of three. He's got to pitch one night and then come in the next day and see how his hamstring feels and how his arm feels. So, even if he goes on a rehab assignment in the next several days, probably to St. Paul, although maybe not because now all the season, they might send him to Fort Myers because it's warmer.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know that a 36-year-old guy with a hamstring problem needs to be going to St. Paul right now.
Yeah, fair point.
As a 41-year-old guy with a hip problem, right. I don't want to even go there.
Right.
I would expect him to make multiple appearances. But so, maybe a week or two from now, who knows what the bullpen looks like by then. I mean, I don't know. You got Cole Sands. I mean, Funderburk and Cole Sands finished the game yesterday.
Right.
Saved them some arms. Although it's always interesting to me when that's the priority before an off day.
Right.
When it was 4-2, they were down 4-2. So it's not a high likelihood you're going to win the game. But if you're down 4-2 in the eighth inning and the next day is an off day, is Cole Sands the choice there? No, he pitched fine. He didn't give up any runs.
Right.
But I feel like that's potentially a higher leverage spot because you don't need to save guys because they're going to get a day off anyway the next day. Right. So Theobar will be the first guy back. There hasn't really been a meaningful update on Topa. Duran is out long enough that he's not going to have he was there and everything. He was mobile. But there's not – it's similar to Lewis in that there's not going to be a meaningful update for a little while at least. The last couple of things I want to talk about bullpen, speaking of, the reliable section of the bullpen or the trustworthy section, although the bullpen –
the high leverage
section. Yeah, the high – that's better because the bullpen's been the best part of the team so far.
Yeah, right.
Even without Duran, even without Theobar.
Even the back end of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So once Duran goes down, it's clear that Brock Stewart and Griffin Jacks, in some order, are going to be closer primary setup guy. And we saw that in the Kansas City series. They basically did one where Stewart was in a closing spot and one where Jacks was in, sort of the ordering. But then we saw an interesting thing in Milwaukee, which is they use Stewart in the seventh inning and then Jacks in the eighth inning. And then they got to the ninth inning. Now, they happen to tack on a run to make it a four-run lead instead of a three-run lead, which means it wasn't technically a save.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was looking like it was going to be a 6-3 game. I can tell you the beat writer group chat was – we were putting in guesses as to who was going to pitch the ninth inning. I won, because I brilliantly looked at the lineup and saw there were two lefties.
Right, exactly.
And
right,
I said,
right.
I think it's going to be Okert. But there were all kinds of theories. Joe Nathan got suggested. I think somebody said Rick Aguilera. But and so it's interesting. It's a – I think that's sort of the natural next step of how they've handled bullpens a lot of the time. And this isn't how you would do things if you had a great closer like Duran. You would just say he pitches the ninth, whatever. You don't have to get cutesy with it to try to squeeze extra value out. But you don't have him now, and neither Brock Stewart nor Griffin Jacks have this great, you know, they're not proven closers or whatever. And also, games can be won and lost in the seventh and eighth inning. And we saw that. Those were higher leverage spots.
Right.
The seventh inning of the Milwaukee game and the eighth inning of the Milwaukee game were more important, higher leverage spots with more, you know, the swing of wins and losses rode more heavily on that than ended up being the case in the ninth inning. Because the ninth inning was a four-run lead. Well, and so, didn't know that was going to happen, obviously.
Right, right.
But the idea is, can we deploy these two most proven relievers we have in spots that we know for certain have a big leverage impact on the game? And sometimes that's going to leave a situation where you just go, hey, Okert can get close things out here with a four-run lead. Now, there are going to be situations where it leaves you in a spot where now it's a one-run lead or a tie
right,
game.
That's right.
And now you don't have your two best relievers, and that's going to look ugly. But I don't hate that overall approach to things. Duran's out.
We saw this early in the season last year, though, too, where we would take a look at it and think, is he saving his best pitcher for their best hitters?
Yes.
And as I recall, we were at the top of the lineup versus the Brewers. Hoskins, who was the first guy Okert pitched to, was batting fifth.
Right.
So you were going fifth, sixth, seventh,
yeah,
eighth, ninth, or something like that, which means, you know, you'd gotten through – you know, the top of that Brewers. Hoskins is exactly the guy you don't want to see facing, Okert facing in that big
right-handed
slugger.
But he ended up facing lefties
right,
after that.
But you've got a three-run lead.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And yes, you know, you're right. We've seen that with Duran. Now, last year,
we saw it early in the season, and
then
it kind
of
disappeared.
He just became sort of a traditional closer,
right, that's right,
which inevitably is what happened to, like, great relievers. They end up being used more creatively early in their careers, and but I think that's definitely it.
But I also wonder if that's just something that Baldelli tends to do early in the season, and then as everybody kind of gets used to a role,
maybe
they stick with it.
But so I think the leverage in the inning lended itself to that.
Right.
But more than that, it's like, even if we think this is just going to be a three-run game in all three of these innings, do we want our best pitching option facing their most dangerous hitters? Right. Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, it's funny that people don't assume that logically because it's been so warped by saves and closers and all that stuff, the whole concept of late inning. But if you can do it, if you think you have a reliever who's better than all your other relievers, you want him to face the other team's best hitters. You don't want to just go, well, this guy pitches the seventh, this guy pitches the eighth, because the guy who pitches the seventh might face the best part of the lineup,
right,
and the guy who pitches the ninth might face, you know, 7, 8, 9.
Right, that's right.
And so what kind of sense does that make? Now, so I think that's a good way to manage it, particularly when you're missing your best pitcher, but you are going to get into spots doing that,
right,
where you're going to put yourself up for a lot of criticism.
Well, just, I mean,
where it things turn a little bit, and all of a sudden then, you know, it's a one-run game, and Okert's facing Hoskins leading off the ninth inning, and you go, well, this wasn't what we wanted.
Right. Well, I mean, I would also suggest, like a month ago, right, if you were suggesting that Okert was going to be closing games, it wasn't a close because it was a four-run
finishing
a game like that where, you know, it's kind of close versus a game you want to win. Like,
I mean, he warmed up while it was a save situation.
I mean,
they just tacked on a run.
Oh, we've seen Okert. Okert's looked good so far, right? Yeah. And so we're treating him as a high leverage reliever in part because he's the third best pitcher we have standing at this point.
Yes, but also he's the number one lefty.
Yes,
and wouldn't have been as surprising to see Theobar, a healthy Theobar, in years past in that ninth inning.
Yeah.
It just so happens Theobar's hurt, so who's your next lefty? It's Okert.
But, you know, when they traded for Okert, the idea of trading for Okert was similar to trading away Nick Gordon, which is, not sure he's good enough to make the roster, but he's out of options, so we're going to have him on the team.
Right.
So we might as well send him to somebody who needs him.
Yes, like, from the Marlins standpoint.
From the Marlins standpoint, he's like, well, we're not sure he's good enough to make this bullpen, but he's out of options, so we might as well find something to do with him, similar to what the Twins did with Gordon, which tells you where Oakert kind of ranked in terms of, I mean, he ranked towards the bottom of that bullpen.
He was supposed
too.
To be the second lefty. Right. He was supposed to be kind of the middle inning, lower leverage lefty.
Exactly.
Now that's the role Funderburk is
that's
pitching.
Right, that's right.
I think.
So to see him elevated from, you know, maybe not even making him Harlan's roster to the closing
he
a game here.
I mean, because he makes $1.5 million arbitration. By the way, tough roster to crack in Miami. They're only 0-8 right now.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Poor Luis Arraez and poor Nick Gordon, although he's playing a decent amount. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Alcala pitching the ninth inning in that type of situation, depending on the matchup. Jay Jackson.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the point is that I know we've been so conditioned as baseball fans since the 80s, basically, to view the ninth inning as different. And it's sort of like our conversation with strikeouts. There are some situations where the ninth inning is different, but there are a lot of situations where it's just the last three outs.
Right.
And a lot of guys, when you have a 3 or 4 run lead or a 5 run lead, can get three outs before giving up the lead. And so why hold back your legitimately best, most reliable relievers for a situation that may not arrive at all and may not be all that crucial? And why put, for instance, Oakert into a spot in the seventh inning where the game could be on the line, and then you never get to the ninth inning with the lead? So I think it's interesting. I also just think there's going to be spots where it doesn't go smoothly, and you're just ripe for ripping. But I don't really think Baldelli cares about that too much.
It was the second game where we saw Alcala come in as Oakert and Alcala be basically the seventh inning high leverage guys. Yeah.
Which makes sense. It's going to be Oakert and either Jackson or Alcala.
Right, that's right.
Are going to be taking the spots that normally would have.
That's a guy who we weren't sure was even going to be on the roster, and now he's.
You always say that, but
Alcala
was sure after about 2 weeks he was going to be on the roster. Certainly once the injuries happened. Stallmont was the guy that no one thought was going to be on the roster.
I mean, once the injuries happened, yes, we were pretty sure. Yes. But we spent most of spring training wondering, well, who's going to get that last spot? Is it going to be Alcala? Is it going to be Stallmont?
We began spring training wondering that.
Okay.
And then one of them was throwing 98 and one of them was throwing 92.
Fair.
And that's how it went. But last couple of things here. Dick Bramer was back at the ballpark. And he threw out the first pitch, and there was a little ceremony on the field. Maurer was there to catch the first pitch, which was nice. But then before that, up in the press box, the television booth for the Twins. So there's a visiting television booth and a home television booth.
Right.
The home television booth was named after Dick Bramer.
Right.
They put a little plaque up with his picture. It's similar. The home radio booth is named after John Gordon in a similar way.
Right.
And so there was a little ceremony. Dave St. Peter talked. Justin Morneau talked. Dick Bramer, they gave him an award and a gift. They made a donation to his school in Dumont, Minnesota or something. I don't know. It's some town who has like -6 people living there or something, the way they talk about it. And they were all at the game. Like his grade school teacher was there. And, you know, Dick Bramer is off this job after 40 years.
Right, yeah, right.
You can think to your, you can do the math there on how old his grade school teacher might be. But anyway, he was classy as always, teared up a little bit, a couple points. And then right after he teared up, like he was talking about how he's been doing this since 1983 and 40 years and how much it took for the team to get to Target Field. And he even mentioned North Carolina. It almost didn't happen, blah, blah, blah. And he says, so the fact that the team got here and now this will always be here outside the door of the press booth here means a lot to me. And he was tearing up. And then clearly he thought to himself, all right, I can't cry here this much. Let me make a joke. And so then he says, now that my name's outside the door, I kind of view myself as the landlord of the TV booth. And St. Peter's like, okay, where's this going? And he says, I got a few rules. I'll tell Dave what my full list of rules is as the landlord of that room.
Okay.
But I'll share one with you now. And he says, my one rule is whether you're doing the game, whether you're producing the game, whether you're just a guest, whether you're just stick your head in, if you're in that room, if you're in that TV booth that's named after me, and a foul ball gets hit in there, you have to catch the foul ball. That's the only rule I have because he's big on you need to catch the foul ball. And then people laughed and he paused and he turned to his left and he said, so, for Dan Hayes, maybe that means don't go into the booth. huge, uproarious laughter. Fantastic. I'm clapping. I'm get him. Get him, Nick. Do more. Do more.
That's funny.
Roast his ass. So I thought that was a nice little touch. So yeah, it was good to see Dick Bremer. We talked about this more on the Patreon side, but I didn't hear the broadcast yesterday because I was at the game. But the I listened to a lot of the or watched a lot of the TV broadcasts for the first road trip. I thought Corey Provis was excellent, and I thought specifically the pairing with Morneau was excellent in ways that we've never heard a Twins broadcast be in my lifetime. In that it was more conversational, more free flowing, and this is not criticism of Bremer, who did a great job for 40 years. And they've also clearly kind of leaned into analytics, data, stat presentation from a production side and from a graphic standpoint, in part because I think that suits Provis and Morneau really well.
Right.
And that allowed them, you know, you put hard hit rate up on the screen and then they can spend 30 seconds saying to people, here's what hard hit rate is. Here's the league average. Here's the Twins leaders. Here's Morneau saying, wow, I think as an MVP hitter, why this is important, why it's meaningful, what I view it as. Right. And I just thought, man, if you just – this was your first Twins game you ever watched on TV,
right,
you would have no sense of how different this is than last year or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And certainly
– back when we started a podcast.
Yes.
Right, yeah, right.
There were a lot of moments – please do not take this as criticism, but there were a lot of moments listening to the first four or five games on the road where it seemed to me like a podcast for stretches.
Right, yeah, right.
And I mean that as the highest possible compliment, right, even though you know, I'd be self-deprecating about our podcast. But like – they so often were like a stat would get shown up on the screen of, you know, whiff rate or exit velocity or something. And they just did such a good job, I thought, of contextualizing why that's meaningful, what it means, what this number for this guy means relative to average or good or everything. Or even something as simple as when they show the lineup to open the game,
right,
they don't show batting average anymore. They show OPS.
Right.
That's a minor change, but hugely more meaningful in terms of actually educating your audience or, you know, showing them information that matters. And so I give credit to Morneau and Provis, who that's much, much more up their alley. That's how they talk. Right. I can tell you, that's how they talk in the hallways. That's how they talk at lunch. That's how they, like, that's how they talk. But I also give credit to the production side of Bally Sports North for choosing that stat package. You don't have to choose that stat package.
Right.
They give you options. You can do the old school one. You can do the new school one and all that. So I thought it was a breath of fresh air. And I, you know.
I'm looking forward to listening to a broadcast. I have not seen a broadcast.
John's
going to
text me and go, you're stupid. This is horrible. That's going to be funny.
Because I'm opening day I was at. 4 days since then I was in Philadelphia, so I'm watching the game, but I've got the sound down, you know, so we get the graphic pictures, and then at the game yesterday, and at the game tomorrow, and at the game Sunday, so it'll be a while before I actually get to check in on this. We'll have some time to work out the kinks.
Here's the thing. John is the opposite of me in many ways, this being one of them, and Christy too. There's months that go by when John and Christy are not at home sitting on their couch watching television, where there's never 3 days that go by when I'm not doing that. And so John watches every Twins game. First of all, he's at most of the Twins games at home, and he watches most of the road games. But a lot of times, John is watching them from a bar stool or from somebody's house
on my phone with the sound off.
Right. And it's like he doesn't have a great sense.
The whole time in Philly. I appreciate you mentioning that and kind of saying that it moved towards the podcasting, in part because I've been thinking about this a little bit since we are talking with some reporters at some point here in the next 24 hours about sort of that podcasting and how it works and
somebody
how it doesn't
work. Somebody finally saw fit in year 15 to interview us about what we're doing.
But you know, it has been making me kind of think back to like when we started this, it was not because we were like, oh, we would be really good on a podcast. It was because we were like, we really wish there was better coverage of different type of coverage of baseball We started doing it that way from a writing standpoint in 2001.
Right.
And about 2011, we said, it feels like we could do this, could have better discussions about baseball.
Yeah, the level of, like you said, in 2002.
That was what drove it.
The type of writing was so limited in style
right.
for baseball coverage. Right. It was old school. It was game recaps. It was kind of more – any kind of attempt at opinion wasn't really analysis. It was more just kind of cliches. They got to play harder. And that frustrated us. And then a decade later, basically, we felt like, you know, TV coverage or even radio coverage had gotten the same way, which is like – there's plenty of it. Like, if you just want to hear and watch people talking about the Twins, even in 2011, there were places you can find that. Not enough, I would argue, but certainly more now. But the discussions were so limited in scope. They were so specifically one, you know, angle.
Right. Right.
And it was like, well, what if you talked about it a little differently? What if you talked about it, you know.
A little more in depth. Right. Yeah.
So, but I think now
– and just like we saw, Provis, just as we saw writing kind of come that way – but the mainstream writing kind of moved that direction. We're now seeing, I feel like, the audio and I think video coverage is moving that
direction. That's how it should be, really. Right. I mean, and I joke with like Phil Miller and Bobby now, Nightingale from the Strib. The stuff they put in the Strib, I think they do an excellent job. And I am their direct competitor, so I'm saying that. I think they do an awesome job with the Strib. I am a subscriber. I read their stuff.
Yes, me too.
The stuff they put into just random articles in the Strib, a random game recap, in terms of stats used and stories told, you know, just even citing OPS or something like that instead of batting average.
We would get legit excited about that in 2000. When somebody accidentally slipped that into one thing. Yeah,
reading that in the newspaper 20 years ago when we first started doing that. And so that, I think, is a good thing. I think on the broadcast side, it's a good thing. Now, you still need to do certain things old school as a baseball broadcaster.
Sure.
And I think Provis is quite good at that. Right. Bramer was the best at that, obviously. I mean, no, you're not going to find anybody better as an old school, big voice, traditional, you know, baseball broadcaster than Dick Bramer. Right. It's like you built him in a lab for that. But I think Corey Provis brings enough of that, but also a new dimension, particularly when paired with Morneau, who's super smart and new school, or even like Glenn Perkins later in the season, who we know as he's been on our show before.
Right.
And so I think there's an opportunity there for them to be really good. All right. Thank you to Harry's Razors, the Game Time app, Raycon, and RotoWire. Right. Look at that memory.
Very good.
God, I'm good. Yep. I'm losing it physically. Also I'm losing it mentally. Oh, yeah, damn, is there a third thing? Physically, mentally? No, that's
spiritually.
It.
Spiritually.
I never had it spiritually, exactly. So I'm empty.
Always a desert.
I'm triple zero. Yeah.
Well, we will be back with Patreons next week. Next free show will be 2 weeks from now.
Probably. We'll see. It depends. John's going to Japan.
Yes. I'm going to Japan for like 3.5 weeks. So we're going to try and continue.
He might never come back. Is there a possibility you guys just like it there and never come back, would you say?
I don't think that's probable.
Even with me waiting here?
Well, that's a good point.
Where you go, you know, Chris.
Maybe I can send you to Japan.
Yeah. Sure. I get to Japan. You guys got Chinese food here?
We are going to check out some baseball parks in Japan. I'm really excited about see the and in Seoul, Korea. Hopefully to catch an LG Twins game.
That's right.
In Seoul, Korea, and where the Yorimuri Giants play is the Tokyo Dome. That's the exact duplicate of the Metrodome.
Oh yeah,
like literally, that dome is an exact duplicate of it. So we're going to check that out. So
yes, but if you would like the maximum amount of Gleeman and the Geek in your ears,
right?
Which you should. Look at how charming we are. God, we're amazing. No, subscribe to the Patreon. It's $1 an episode.
Yeah, we'll never do more than 9 episodes in a month.
Yeah, I mean we do 2 a week basically. Right, it costs you $2 a week. Yeah,
usually it's 8. Right,
and if we don't put an episode out for a few days, you're not charged. You're only charged.
Right.
When we put the new episodes out, we're at an all-time high for subscribers to that. So you might, if you say to yourself, I'm kind of into that, but I don't want to be like one of 50 people in that little club. Well, there's like 4,000 something people in that little club. So come join it. Get midweek episodes. Keep up to speed. A lot of episodes after games or we'll react to news and stuff. Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/Gleeman. And if not, we'll see you back on the free side eventually.
In 2 weeks, yeah.
We'll see. It depends how much John, you know, if he goes in to Japan and just decides, I'm into Japanese baseball now, he might have to find a new coach.
Maybe.
I don't know that much about Japan. Some might argue I don't know that much about American baseball. All right, goodbye.